And good morning. It's 1 minute before 11 o'clock on your Thursday. KBOO Portland is the station, your community radio. And coming up in a half hour, we've got SW Concert hosting Words and Pictures. It's conversations with pioneering animators and comic artists. But first, it's Between the Covers. And today, Dan Johnson sits down with author Buzz Bernard to discuss his latest thriller, Cascadia, a novel that imagines the effects of a major earthquake and tsunami in Oregon. That is coming up in just a minute or so. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor People's Health Clinic Benefit Party, Saturday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. People's Health Clinic is a volunteer-run clinic that hosts a walk-in at Sisters of the Road every third Friday of the month. Services include naturopathic medicine, acupuncture, massage, herbalism, and more. This party will feature live music, an herbal cocktail bar, food, raffles, and more. Again, that's People's Health Clinic Benefit Party, Saturday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Between the Covers. I'm Dan Johnson. And my guest today is H.W. Buzz Bernard, and he says we can call him Buzz. Besides that, he has it on his book. So Buzz is the author of 5 fiction books and 5 nonfiction books. His fiction books are titled Eyewall, Plague, Supercell, Blizzard, and now the newest one is called Cascadia. Buzz, welcome back to the Pacific Northwest, and thanks for stopping by KBOO. Tell our listeners, if you would, what Cascadia is all about.
Cascadia is a thriller, let's call it an eco-thriller, perhaps, set against the Cascadia subduction zone. And thankfully, since I'm in the Northwest, I don't think I have to explain what the Cascadia subduction zone is. I find when I talk to audiences in the Southeast, where I'm from, by the way, where I live now, half of my presentation, the first half of the presentation, has to be about, first of all, where is the Cascadia subduction zone? What is it? And why is it such a threat to the Pacific Northwest? Oh, and of course, then you wanted to hear a little bit about the novel. The novel is really 3 separate storylines set against the background of the Cascadia subduction zone and the eventual megaquake and tsunami that it triggers. So the 3 separate stories come together at the conclusion of the book. The main character in the book is Dr. Rob Elwood, who's a geologist, seismologist, and also, by the way, a private pilot, which becomes a key factor in the novel. Dr. Elwood, as I said, is a scientist, but he's having visions, nightmares, repeatedly, of the Cascadia subduction zone rupturing, triggering the megaquake and resultant tsunami. As I said, he has them repeatedly. He is considering going public with this, but, you know, being a good scientist, he has a lot of reservations about doing it. He's eventually convinced by a friend that he should go ahead and go public with this, so against his own better judgment, and much to the chagrin of his wife and the ridicule he received from the public, he goes ahead, does it. And, you know, it's kind of like the old story that we meteorologists like to say, it ends up being a case of right forecast, wrong day. The event does occur, just not when he thought it was going to. Then there's a couple of subplots that also tie into the story. We've got an elderly black man, a military retiree, and his best friend, a huge Bernese mountain dog that spend their days looking for the lost treasure of Neocony Mountain. And if you're from Oregon, you've likely heard about the lost treasure of Neocony Mountain. What this individual comes to find out, though, is he's looking on the wrong mountain. And then the third story, the second subplot, involves a retired Air Force fighter pilot, served his time in the military. When he was a young lieutenant, captain, he thought he was God's gift to women and everything else. He had a lot of those. He had a fiancée. Suddenly decided he really didn't want to be married. He was stationed overseas at the time. She was still back in the States, and he just cut off abruptly all communication with her. No more mails, no more phone calls, nothing, just disappeared from her life. Now he's looking back 25 years after the fact and decides that, you know, I was really a jerk, and I need to make amends to get my own life straightened out. He's been through a couple of busted marriages already, can't hold a job. So he wants to look up this fiance, who he discovers is now an attorney in this little Oregon coast town of Manzanita. The fighter pilot's living in Atlanta now. So he makes up under a false name, he schedules an appointment with her in the town of Manzanita. Journeys there, again, just to apologize, to say, I'm really, truly sorry. This comes from the heart. He's not trying to rekindle a romance or anything, but here's the key. Things don't go well.
Now, the thing that intrigued me was, before we get into the character building that you do, and I think you did a heck of a job, the story actually starts in about 1700, in what is now Seaside, or approximated to be approximately Seaside. What does that have to do with the rest of the story?
The first megaquake and tsunami that we became aware of, we were able to deduce through science, occurred on January 26, 1700. We anthropologists and researchers were aware of Indian legends that talked about a great flood from the ocean and rock slides tumbling down from mountains and rivers running backward. And we thought, you know, they were just kind of cool stories with no basis whatsoever in fact. But we came to discover that, oh, wow, you know, these Native Americans really went through this. So that the setting for the Seaside event and the Indians going through the earthquake and tsunami is based on fact, based on these Indian legends. Based on my research, I determined that there likely was an Indian village along the western bank of the Neconicum River that runs through Seaside. And I just happened to be doing a reading in Seaside recently about 200 feet from where the imagined setting was.
I lived a block off the Neconicum River, so I know the territory.
Very familiar with it there.
Yeah.
But, so that was the prologue to the book, and then I transition into the modern-day dangers and events that score out through the book.
Now, even though we classify this as a work of fiction, your background probably lent quite a bit to the scientific part. Would that be true?
That's very true, because in all the books I write, Eyewall, for instance, was about a Cat 5 hurricane that hits the Georgia coast community. Supercell was about chasing tornadoes on the Great Plains. Blizzard, obviously, was about a blizzard, but my background kind of forces me to be correct, scientifically correct, when I write about these events. So I want to make sure I get the facts straight. So in a sense, you know, when I'm talking about the Cascadia subduction zone and the megaquake, tsunami, everything that follows it, all of that is based on fact. I didn't make this stuff up. The book is not science fiction. I want the correct science in all my books when I write them. And people have told me in the past, you know, I read this book about the hurricane, and holy cow, you know, I learned something about hurricanes, about how you guys forecast them, how the hurricane hunters fly through the eye wall into the eye of the storm. I learned about how you go about chasing tornadoes. So, yeah, the fact is there, absolutely.
One of the things that I found interesting was when we reached that point in the story where the 9.0 earthquake has taken place and we're waiting for the tsunami to occur, there's an airplane waiting in Manzanita to fly off. You know, to me, I could just feel the tension in that whole thing. As a writer, for you, did you feel like you were just pounding keys, or did you feel that sense of tension building in you as well?
I think I write very cinematically. When I'm writing a scene, I feel kind of embedded in it, and I picture it. I'm hopefully feeling what the characters are going through. And I could picture the tsunami coming up the Nakanikum River toward the little airstrip there, just south of Manzanita. So it's a lot more than just pounding keys, absolutely.
Now, the one thing I worried about, and this is not meant as criticism at all, but the one thing that I worried about when that plane took off and was heading towards Portland, you know, you can only fly those little Cessnas so far. And I kept thinking to myself, is he going to run out of fuel? You know?
that was one of my considerations, and I did think about this. But, you know, a Cessna can, the distance from Portland to the coast is very short.
Right.
You know, it's a little quicker than coming down Highway 26 or 6 to get to the coast. So, yeah, I thought about, well, should I make fuel an issue here? I thought, well, no, it wouldn't be an issue if he'd tanked up before he left home to fly down to Manzanita.
So right.
I figured he was going to get into enough trouble anyhow, so I didn't want to add running out of gas part of that.
So based on your experience of recently having been in Seaside, you know that they face that issue on a constant daily basis of, you know, how are we going to avoid the big one? Did you get any of that feeling or vibe yourself after you had gotten there and you'd seen what the town looked like?
The reaction of the audiences I talked to, you know, consider an audience in the Southeast, one in the Northwest. The people in the Northwest are probably a lot more interested in the earthquake threat and tsunami itself, per se, than in the story. People in the East, when I talk to audiences there, are more interested in the thriller aspect of the story and what's going to keep me turning pages. So there is a very definite difference in the people who might be interested in Cascadia between folks on the East Coast and folks on the West Coast.
I remember about, and I'm approximating here, about 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago, we were having tsunami drills in Seaside. And having lived right down off of the Nakanikum and on the way to the beach, the alarm went off, and the whole idea was for everybody that could hear that alarm, they were supposed to walk up to the top of the hill, which was, and I'm going to, about a mile and a half or 2 miles uphill.
Sounds about right.
And it would have been an extremely strenuous trip for many people. And I took the conclusion, and I'm not a fatalist by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought to myself, I'm not going to start hobbling up there, because I know that if it were that really bad tsunami that would hit the city, there would be no place to hide anyway. So the fatalist in me sparked for that brief time.
Of course, you really don't know exactly how big the tsunami is going to be. So maybe you ought to give it a shot anyhow.
No, I moved to Portland and now okay. live in a high-rise building.
Well,
so.
We hope that doesn't fall down during the earthquake.
Yeah.
Then, but I think the issue is, you know, we say that, you know, the tsunami is going to get up to, you know, so many feet. Yeah, the problem is we really don't know. I think the watchword is, you know, head for higher ground and keep heading up. You got 15 or 20 minutes after the shaking stops, after the earthquake relents.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not sure I would want to take a fatalist attitude, but, you know, do your best. It is going to be a challenge because, you know, you were probably running this test when the roads were intact and no trees or power lines were down and the bridges were still there.
Exactly right.
Else. So it's
no
question it's going to be a challenge, but give it a shot. When I was in Manzanita, you know, they gave me a little button, like a one you'd wear on your shirt pocket or something that says, be prepared or we're prepared, not scared. So,
well, you know, I think the North Oregon coast is probably about the only place here you could go up and down Highway 101 to see tsunami signs warning people that it's a tsunami zone.
And that's what really got me interested in this in the first place. On one of my trips out here, I think it was in 2012, I saw those signs. I'd never seen them before. But they looked very very similar to the signs we have along the Atlantic seaboard and the Gulf Coast of hurricane evacuation routes. And I was thinking, tsunami evacuation? Really? I thought the tsunamis they had around here were 2 or 3 feet or something. And my brother then, a couple of years after that, I think, sent me an article going in depth about the threat that the Cascadia subduction zone offers to the Pacific Northwest. And I read that and I thought, wow, really?
Yeah.
That's a novel.
Yeah. Oregon State University has done extensive research on the tsunamis and how various areas along the coast will respond to them. And they'd spent a lot of time there in the seaside area as well.
Yeah, and that was one reason I focused my story on the North Oregon coast as opposed to, you know, Washington coast or Seattle or someplace like that, because there has been so much research done along the coastal areas here with the evacuation maps and the studies and the computer simulations and everything else. There was just so much more material available.
Right. Well, listen, if folks listening want to know how they can get their hands on this book, do you have an email address that they can reach you, or what's the best source?
Well, they can go on Amazon. They can go on BarnesandNoble.com. They can order it through their local bookstore. The publisher is Bell Books out of Memphis, Tennessee. And my website is www.buzzbernard.com.
That should be easy enough.
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay, now you've written 5 of these books. What are the nonfiction books that you've written?
Oh, the nonfiction books, I published my first one in 79. They were what they call trade books as opposed to textbooks about weather and climate change. And I kind of got tired of doing that because it was a lot of work and I wasn't making much money off it. Decided to take a crack at writing novels. I actually backed off from writing for about 10 years. I didn't do anything. Then began to work on novels again.
So
it wasn't any easier. Let me tell you, it took 4 different manuscripts and 10 years for me to get my first novel published.
Is that right? Wow. I don't feel so bad. Okay. You've got five natural catastrophes that you've written
essentially,
about. Essentially, yeah. Of those, which do you think that it got you the most excited about? The love of a tsunami and earthquake, or
I think the fact that we know this is going to happen. Don't know when. I mean, it could be tomorrow. It could be 200 years from tomorrow. But we know it is going to happen. It is going to affect people. There will be fatalities, a lot of destruction. So that really struck a chord with me. Some of the scenes were actually kind of difficult for me to write in Cascadia, just because I knew I was writing about something that's going to happen, that it's in an area of the country I love. It's in an area of the country I grew up in. So, yeah, that it resonated a little more strongly with me than my other novels have.
Here's a scientific question for you. And having originally come from California, I'm very familiar with earthquakes. They're no big deal to me. I mean, they're big deals, but, you know. If a 9.0 earthquake took place on the coast, realistically, how drastic an effect would that have on the Portland metro area?
Well, the earthquake itself would be pretty darn destructive in the Portland metro area, I think. The Willamette Columbia is not going to be affected significantly by any tsunami, but it's the earthquake itself. I mean, this is a major event. I remember being up in Anchorage after they had the, I think it was a 9.2 up there in 1964. And I was up there several months after the fact, but, you know, there were still large areas of Anchorage where there were just big holes in the ground where buildings had collapsed. And the fear in Portland, of course, is there's a lot of older masonry construction in particular that's in acute danger of coming down when the earthquake hits. Bridges may go down, particularly the approaches,
right,
the ramps to the bridges. So, yeah, if they get a 9.0 or 9.2, you know, in the subduction zone out there, there is going to be significant damage in Portland.
It could literally change the whole landscape.
No question about it.
Yeah. I mentioned early on that I now live in a high-rise building, and we've been doing renovation work for the last year, and it's part of a two-year project. But one of the things that they had to put in place in the reconstruction of the building was making it more earthquake-proof. And they had a thing on the news the other night that was stating how many buildings there are in the Portland area that are not earthquake proof.
I think that's a large number, and that's pretty scary. So,
oh yeah,
you got to remember too that we didn't know about this threat 30 years ago. I mean, this is all relatively new. You know, I grew up here in the 50s and 60s, and we'd go down to the coast all the time. Never second thought about, you know, tsunamis and major earthquakes. Just didn't know about it, weren't aware of it. Scientists were aware of the subduction zone, but they thought it was, you know, inactive or benign and wasn't a big threat. And then all of that began to change with some scientific work that was done starting about 30 years ago.
Right. So, my friends listening, if you're just joining us, this is Between the Covers. My guest is Buzz Bernard. He's written this fantastic book called Cascadia, and it's about that big one that hits the North Oregon coast. It is a fiction novel, but it's based on a lot of scientific fact. And so I think it's worth sitting down and, you know, you could feel the tension. As a matter of fact, as I'd mentioned a little bit ago, that opening story with the Indians on the beach there, and quite possibly the Clatsop Indians could have been there.
Yeah,
that's just an assumption on my part or a guess, but and the attitudes that they had about whether they should go or stay.
And, you know, that was where the Indian legend came into play, from being passed down from generation to generation. The old grandfather knew they had to get out of there. The younger Indians didn't quite understand that, but he had taken these Indian legends to heart, and he knew that something really bad was on the way.
Right. Well, listen, we have just a few minutes left. I have a sort of a side issue question to ask you. Since you've been here on the coast and in the Northwest, you've heard and seen on the news, I'm sure, about a new phenomenon that they're talking about in the weather, about this blob that is in existence out on the Pacific that is just off our coast. What do you make of that?
You're talking about the warm
exactly.
blob. Yeah. I think that's something cyclical that, you know, depends on the Earth, the ocean currents, and the setup of the upper atmosphere patterns. It's certainly ocean temperatures are a big factor in the weather. Specifically, I can't, you know, really address what the future of that might be and how it would affect the weather here. But I am aware of it, yes.
Right. Do you think there's any connection between that situation and the potential earthquake and tsunami?
I would say almost none.
Okay. Just curious.
Oh, doesn't hurt to ask.
No.
The only way you find out.
Yeah. Well, Buzz, I want to thank you very much for joining us today and talking about your book. We wish you much success. You're listening to Between the Covers. My guest has been H.W. Buzz Bernard, and quite a prolific writer, a scientist. What do they call you?
Meteorologist, author.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thriller writer.
Used car salesman? No. I'm just kidding. But thank you very much for being with us.
Been my pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
And for Between the Covers, I'm Dan Johnson. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Stepping Outside Polite Conversation Evening with the Tar Sands Valve Turners, Wednesday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at the Sunnyside Community House in Portland. Hear five of the Tar Sands Valve Turners share stories of their nonviolent direct actions that took place October 11th and hear about why they took this form of climate activism. Again, that's Stepping Outside Polite Conversation, an evening with the Tar Sands Valve Turners, on Wednesday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at the Sunnyside Community House, 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meets the third Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kboo.org.
Hailing all listeners, DJ Dim Sums here from the Astro Traveling Collective. Tune your mind, body, and soul in this Sunday at 6:30 p.m. I'll be talking with my guests, Chicago's Bad Boys of Jazz, the Hypnotic Brass Ensemble. They played Arlene Schnitz on the 16th, eight sons of the great jazz trumpeter and one of the founding members of the AACM, Phil Caron. We will travel through the now music that is the Hypnotic Brass Ensemble. Tune in this Sunday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. on KBOO in Portland.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, we'll have a special live radio play, Calvin Coolidge Goes Crazy, on Thursday, November 10th at 7 p.m. This live radio play is set in 1927, expanding on to the true story of Calvin Coolidge's decision in 1927 to not run for a second term as President of the United States. It also features songs from the era by Jerome Kern, Fats Waller, Cole Porter, Rube Bloom, and more. Again, that's Calvin Coolidge Goes Crazy, Thursday, November 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street here in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Get him.
Hello and welcome to Words and Pictures, the comics and animation show. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and today we're going to be talking about freedom of expression. My guest today is the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. They fight for artists and writers who have been censored, suppressed, or in some cases imprisoned. And they just recently moved their headquarters from New York to Portland. Charles Brown